The effects of climate change are unavoidable across the U.S., but the Midwest is feeling the impact less than other parts of the country, which has cities in the region preparing for an influx of people who are relocating from parts of the country hit harder. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss preparing for climate migration while ensuring current residents don't get displaced are Green Umbrella Interim Executive Director Van Sullivan. Thanks for being here, Van.
Thanks, Lucy. Happy to be here.
And Take It Principal Terry Schwarz. Thanks for being here, Terry.
Thank you.
So, Van, what is it about Cincinnati that makes it a potential climate migration destination?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, we are relatively protected from some climate impacts such as hurricanes, wildfires, some of the really devastating things you see happening across the coasts. And I'll mention, you know, across the globe, there are populations who are being hit much harder than sort of the more protected inland Midwestern states. I think in addition to that inherent resilience, we also have a very strong infrastructure basis to build from. I think Cincinnati, for example, we used to be far more populated than we are today, surpassing over 500,000 several decades ago. So we do have existing infrastructure that can support larger population. That said, and I know we'll talk about this today, you know, there needs to be investment to ensure that that growth is equitable and that the infrastructure can serve populations equitably as well.
Yeah. Van, are we already seeing people move to Cincinnati to leave behind stronger impacts of climate change?
We are. And I think it is hard to fully understand why there are demographic shifts when folks choose to move. I think it's a mix of factors, and we're increasingly observing that people are bringing climate into their calculations. And so we collaborated this past year with the City of Cincinnati as well as the Regional Chamber to do a report that you can find online that does a demographic analysis of, you know, not only how much growth are we seeing, but where are folks moving from? And we're seeing folks moving from around the Midwest, as well as from places like Atlanta, Georgia, or New York City, or California. We also saw a lot of international immigration. And so to be able to parse out all the different reasons why people are moving here is hard, but we have collected many stories of folks who, for example, met a person named Dean recently who moved from New Orleans purely because they had struggled with flooding so many times in many different neighborhoods across New Orleans. And they said, you know, I think I need to relocate because this is too challenging, and landed in Cincinnati in large part due to our inherent resilience.
Mm. Wow. It's got to be hard to rebuild time after time after time when you go through something like that.
Yeah. There are people who are displaced out of emergency who have to figure out something because they are experiencing a natural disaster. We are also seeing people move from places out of long-term planning, knowing that they will experience these challenges more and more where they are located. For example, folks moving from maybe LA and the broader LA region, not only struggling with wildfires, but significant mudslides. They might not be moving right now out of immediate emergency, but know that they'll be experiencing this with more frequency and want a more stable future.
Hmm. Terry, what is Cleveland seeing in terms of climate migration?
I think it's perhaps similar. Anecdotally, we know that people have moved to the city, not necessarily for stated reasons of climate change. Sometimes it's more about affordability. I was just talking to a couple of artists yesterday who relocated from New York City because they could have a vastly larger workspace for the particular kind of model making work that they do. But I'm just going to say with caution that it's really too soon to tell what's really going to happen. Van, I was really struck by your comment that somebody moved from New Orleans to Cincinnati to avoid flooding. The one thing that we know is that any place where it rains, it can flood. It's definitely true up here around the, you know, kind of Lake Erie. Cleveland has pretty significant flooding problems. So if somebody had made that choice, you know, they might find themselves in not a exact same situation. Obviously, Cleveland doesn't get hurricanes, but flooding is real. And it happens in a lot of cities that are nowhere near a coast.
Interesting point. Well, we are talking about how Midwestern cities are preparing for climate migration. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Terry, what are you seeing generally in the Great Lakes region? I know you said it's too soon to tell in terms of big numbers, but are you hearing from people that, hey, I'm moving there because I can't take it on the coasts with the stuff that's happening there related to climate change?
Well, I mean, I'll give you two examples. One is Duluth, Minnesota, one of the cities that really got out ahead in terms of the language and marketing around being, and I'm saying this in air quotes, climate haven. And in Duluth, people have seen, kind of incoming residents. Some people come and stay. Some people come and experience a few Minnesota winters and they go back to California. it's like I said, I mean, people are in motion, but I don't know that we have yet to see, a major indicator that suggests that this trend is large scale and lasting. The other example that I think it's important to note is Buffalo. Buffalo saw an enormous influx of people from Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria did so much devastation in Puerto Rico. What brought people from Puerto Rico to Buffalo was usually family ties. There's always a push, like the place where I'm living right now is being more and more difficult to live. And then there's a pull. People I know there, a job opportunity there, some familiarity rather than, just kind of a random jump from here to there. But unfortunately, what happened in Buffalo to some folks is that they moved from Puerto Rico to Buffalo, and then there was this just devastating winter blizzard where people died, in part because the city, which is very used to, I mean, it's Buffalo, really used to heavy snow, but that one was, kind of beyond what they usually experience, and there were a lot of people who were not prepared for it, and it was really difficult. So I don't mean to be negative about this. I think that people will be moving nationally and globally to safer places, to higher ground. But I just think that it is dangerous for us to assume that certain things are a given because there's a lot of ways that things can play out. But the big draw for the Great Lakes is, of course, the fact that there's just this vast amount of fresh water. So in parts of the country that are, experiencing drought, it's a logical connection to think that not just residents, but also businesses that are water dependent may relocate to a place where there is more water access.
Yeah. We got an email from Rich who writes, another reason why Greater Cincinnati is an attractive destination for climate migrants is because, notwithstanding some water quality issues, we have a robust supply of fresh water compared to drought-affected areas around the U.S. So that's something that that the Great Lakes area and Greater Cincinnati have a bit in common, Van. Do you think that's figuring into some people's calculus?
Absolutely. And I think not only resources, as mentioned by Rich and Terry, but also the fact that I think, to Terry's point, it's absolutely true. We do have our own climate challenges here, no doubt. Green umbrella every day, that's what we're working on with regional communities. But I think preparedness is that other factor that folks are looking for. And our region, I think, is one that punches above its weight for its size, the level of priority to not only climate issues, but sort of looking to the future and creating long-term plans, I think, is something that we're noticing some particularly, younger generations looking for what are the services that a city provides? What are the amenities that are also available in addition to these, maybe environmental resources like water, I think is on some people's mind. I'm a native Coloradoan and I grew up in pretty extreme drought. So I love water. I love living in Cincinnati's been my home for decades at this point and it will remain my home because I do love water. But I think that, as Terry's saying, there are push factors and there are pull factors, and it can be hard to discern what exactly may or may not drive populations our way or not. I think what feels important is that it could be a potential factor. There's a lot of uncertainty in general, but I think specifically with climate work, there's so much, I think there are big changes that have happened that some were anticipated and some were not by projections, models, things like that. And we want to make sure that we're prepared for whatever comes down the pike. And so the fact that we are in a region and we have communities that are beginning to think about this, I think is also something that could be a pull factor.
Yeah. We have a caller on the line. Hi, Kathy. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I'm from Los Angeles, and I definitely appreciate how green it is here in Cincinnati. And I'd love to hear what are the concrete plans that Cincinnati has to prepare for global warming. I know, you know, in Los Angeles, water capture is something that's still an issue, and Cincinnati is facing droughts even now. So if this guest can talk more about the concrete plans and something beyond marketing, that would be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Van, can you speak to that?
Sure. No, I appreciate your question. Thank you. Yes, I think there are not only plans, but we have some of the longest running sustainability planning in the country at City of Cincinnati. The first Green Cincinnati plan was published in 2008 and has been updated every 5 years since, with the most recent being published in 2023. The city also recently published a climate migration readiness plan just last month. And so there are very concrete, tangible items in those plans that pertain to all sorts of issues, not only water, as you mentioned, because you're very right. Maybe while on the whole we have very available water resources, there can be sort of micro droughts within a region. And so being able to manage that, particularly for our agricultural communities, is going to be crucial. And it's not only at the city level. At Green Umbrella, alongside many regional partners, we have worked to create the region's first regional sustainability playbook. So this can help support communities across the region to design and implement their own plans. We are also hosting a climate action fellowship. We're in our third year of doing that, where we are working with a number of regional governments to help them create their first sustainability plans or help them take next steps on existing plans.
Okay. Well, thanks for that question, Kathy, and thanks for calling in. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, will federal workers be required to sign NDAs? This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about how Midwestern cities are preparing for climate migration and working to make sure current residents don't get displaced. My guests are Green Umbrella Interim Executive Director Van Sullivan and Take It Principal Terry Schwarz. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk at wvxu.org. We got a question from Matt who asks, how could this potential influx of people affect farmers and farmland in the Midwest or other climate havens? Terry, I'm going to ask you if that's something you've looked at.
Sure, a little bit. I mean, it kind of depends on how in-migration eventually plays out. In my former position at Kent State, we did a lot of work around scenario planning. Right now, the city of Cleveland has about 360-plus residents. At peak, there were
360,000, I assume you mean?
360,000, yes,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's down from over 900,000 people. And so there's about 30,000 vacant lots is the point I'm trying to make, about half of which are in a city or a county land bank. So theoretically, newcomers to the region, newcomers to the city could be accommodated within city limits. Same is true for Detroit and a lot of other cities around the Great Lakes region that have lost a lot of population. But it's hard to do infill residential development at scale. If you've got a lot of people coming in, you might need to build larger developments. And so the pattern that's been in play in a lot of these cities for decades has been to continue to grow outward. And so when I speak of uncertainty, that's one thing that we, kind of are very much uncertain about, is that if people do start coming in larger and larger numbers, will that development be accommodated within the existing urban footprints, the existing infrastructure, or will we start to see, kind of increasing development, putting more pressure on the agricultural regions at the periphery?
Anything you want to add to that, Van?
No, and yes, I think that another thing I'll build into this conversation is not only the reality of agricultural systems, but also types of food that are available. A huge part of this conversation is people. And so I think parts of the social infrastructure will also be really important to focus on to ensure that we can be a welcoming region, foster belonging, inclusivity, ensure that we aren't displacing existing residents. And I think part of creating a welcoming region is ensuring that we have, culturally appropriate and desired foods for all populations that could be here. And I know that's something that is of great focus for many groups here that work with incoming residents who might be refugees, immigrants, asylum seekers. And that's just a whole other part of this layer, is not only food provision, but types of food to ensure that feeling of welcome.
Yeah. Van, you just said that so much of this work is about people. Mm-hmm. How much could Cincinnati's population grow because of climate migration? You talked about how it's important to be prepared for various scenarios. What's the biggest impact that could happen from this kind of migration?
Yeah. And I encourage everyone to look at the climate migration outlook that was published last year by the Center for Research and Data. You can find that online. You can see three different scenarios that they mapped out. And I believe that the scenario with the largest potential growth, I think, projected around 250,000, potentially.
Sure.
I think that is...
And that's not like tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. It's over several decades. But the reality of that type of growth, what it means for a region that's already struggling with huge housing price crisis, where we had the highest rate of increase in rents in the country last year. And we have huge gaps in housing availability. I think that right now there's about a 40,000 unit gap in Hamilton County for housing units. And the scale at which we would need to, like Terry said, prepare our processes and our policies to be able to not only support this type of need, but ensure that we aren't displacing existing residents while we do it, ensuring we're meeting the needs of existing residents now, because we already have need now. And I think that's what this conversation can really help further bolster, is that it's just another layer and another reason why to invest in resilience, both physical infrastructure resilience as well as social and community resilience now.
Van, you just referenced that housing affordability question that we have talked about on this show many, many times. That's something that is a lot of people are thinking about. If people are moving from the coasts, where the cost of living is typically a whole lot higher, and they're coming to Greater Cincinnati, is there a concern that these climate migrants could displace current residents with their, bigger dollars? Maybe they sold a house and they got a lot more money for it. They can buy stuff here. I mean, what's the thinking around that?
For sure. Yeah. No, that is certainly a reality. I think we saw a microcosm of that during 2020, the pandemic, where, some populations fled cities because they sought more space and they had the affluence to be able to do so. And I think this, that could be a potential factor. And so the good news is there's a lot that communities can do to ensure that we protect against displacement. There are cities across the country that, you know, create sort of anti-displacement plans. And that's something we actually work on with regional communities in Greater Cincinnati, is to be thoughtful about, you know, how do we, you know, build for today and tomorrow and, you know, deliver what constituents need in communities now. And so I think that there's a lot we can do, but we got to do it. And so the next best step is the next step. And so that's why I'm glad we're raising awareness about the reality in front of us.
Yeah. Terry, as I understand it, Cleveland has really emphasized equity for its lower income residents in the city's climate action plan. Can you talk to us about why that was important for city leaders there? What's happening there?
Yeah, for sure. Basically, it's focusing on the people most at risk because the effects of climate change are already really evident in the city. You know, whether it's sky-high energy bills, whether it's the lack of air conditioning in the summer, which causes people to have, you know, kind of worse health outcomes. The city's emphasis on equity is just based on a really simple idea that if you begin to solve these problems for the people who have the most need, that it, you know, kind of becomes a benefit for everyone overall. And I agree with everything Van said. And the interesting thing is we have the tools already. Cleveland's, you know, kind of climate action plan. Cities have climate action plans. And if we do the things in that plan, we get ready for, you know, kind of in-migration. But even if people don't come in huge numbers, making the city better for the people who are already there is a win in and of itself. We think about it as a no regret strategy, which, you know, kind of is a good way for a city to allocate resources to spend its dollars.
Yeah. Van, we've talked so much about this, kind of the pros and cons, but do you see the potential influx of climate migrants as a net benefit to the city? Could it be a drain on resources or a force that displaces current residents? I mean, when you're kind of looking at how the scales balance out, do you think there's more positive to it than potential negative impacts?
It's an interesting question. Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of different, I think, angles people take to this issue where there's some fear. You know, fear not only of displacement like we're talking about, fear of reprioritization of needs, not just related to, you know, housing and availability of it, but other resources that we also need access to as residents. I think there's, you know, there are some angles out there where people might use it as a hook to attract certain types of business development or whatever it is. I think you can find any narrative attached to this story. I think I'll bring it back to that at the end of the day, this is about people and climate migration. What it is people moving out of need and necessity and seeking to find home somewhere where they can be safe and stable in the long run. And so I hope that, you know, what this issue can illuminate is that not only do, like Terry said, not only do we know what to do, we've got plans similar to Cleveland. You know, Cincinnati has heavily centered equity in its planning. Green Umbrella, we're working with regional communities to implement, you know, similar plans to make sure our region's ready. Is that, you know, we want to make sure that people are centered in this and that we continue to welcome them and that we have the capacity to do that. And so I think it's about, you know, what keeps us resilient in the face of disaster. Some of it is for sure access to resources and physical infrastructure. But an example I use a lot is that, you know, one of the recent heat waves that was really destructive in Paris, where we saw, you know, thousands of people die. What was the fix? The fix was building community awareness and social connectivity. And they saw almost no deaths because of that. And so to answer your question, I would say I hope we cannot see this as something to fear and something more as, you know, how can we continue to welcome and build the diverse community that we love in Greater Cincinnati, and I think other Midwestern cities as well. We have not only the know-how, we do have the resources if we prioritize it right. And I think that's what this readiness conversation is all about.
Well, I have been talking with Green Umbrella Interim Executive Director Van Sullivan and Take It Principal Terry Schwarz. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I'll just say, you know, if anyone is interested in learning more about this, it's Climate Week this week in Cincinnati. So please check it out and attend some events. We actually have some events related to climate migration. We have the Midwest Regional Sustainability Summit, where we have a whole storytelling workshop about, you know, what does it mean to not only welcome folks, but also understand what this could mean for you and your community.
Okay. Well, up next, will federal workers be required to sign NDAs? This is Cincinnati Edition.